Hello and welcome to the Customer Insight Leader Podcast. Data, analytics, big data science, machine learning, customer insight, behavioral science, blockchain, data ops, data engineering, agile working. Phew, too many terms, too many things to think about. Do you as a leader need somewhere to turn? To hear what other leaders are doing? To hear what really makes a difference in your business? Welcome. The Customer Insight Leader Podcast is here for you. Each episode, we'll be interviewing a different leader in the fields of customer insight, data, and analytics to hear what they really do, what really makes a difference. So settle down, get that cup of coffee, and enjoy the Customer Insight Leader Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Customer Insight Leader Podcast, a place to hear from today's leaders in the fields of customer insight, data, and analytics. I'm your host, Paul Loughlin, and with me today is Gillian Doherty. Gillian is the CEO of the Data Lab Scotland, where she drives the strategic vision for that much-praised Data Science and AI Innovation Centre. In their own words, the Data Lab helps accelerate the journey to impact by fueling innovation through collaboration, building skills, and growing talent, and so strengthening Scotland's thriving data science community. Very true. Following a strong track record as a commercial business leader within IBM, which I'm sure we'll get into, Gillian took on the challenge of leading the Data Lab and has seen remarkable success in their work of uniting researchers and data scientists with businesses and public bodies where they can make a difference. Gillian is also the first guest on this podcast to have been awarded an OBE for her work. She was awarded this honour in 2019 for services to IT and business. And given how much of her time I know Gillian gives to other charities and advancing businesses in Scotland, I for one can see it's well deserved. Welcome, Gillian.
Thank you very much, Paul. It's a real pleasure to be with you today.
Thank you. It's good to have you with us too. We first met several years ago when I spoke at one of your Data Fest events, I think it was, or Data Talent Scotland back then. And I've continued to be impressed with how you've helped a whole generation of students to develop the skills they need and go on to make a difference in business and society. So it is a joy to finally have you join me on this podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here, as I said, and the talk you gave those years ago was wonderful, and we're just proud to have carried on the work from there, Paul.
You're very kind to remember it, Gillian. All the guests I've had on this podcast, I asked them first to tell me their backstory, if you like, to share with the listeners their career story, how they've developed as a data leader, so we know where you're coming from. Gillian, do you want to tell us your career story?
Sure, I'd be happy to. And if I may, I will go back to the days when I was around 15. And it was the night before my maths O-level at the time. And yes, in great preparation style, that evening I had an absolutely humongous row with my mum. There was tears and tantrums, and that was just my mum. And the argument centered around what I was going to do with my life, as you obviously clearly know and have planned out when you're 15. But anyway,
Yeah, sure.
I did have a plan, and that plan was to become a ski instructor in the winter and a kayak instructor in the summer. I loved all things outdoor, but I was also quite a studious girl back then, and actually really studious still, love learning. And my mum had said to me, "No, Gillian, that's not what you're going to do. You're going to go to university. You'll be the first in our family to do so, and that's what you're going to do." Needless to say, getting to bed at 2 a.m. after a big row was not the best preparation. However, I did well in the exam and continued to do well in school and got the opportunity to go to university. And as mums often are, she was right, and off I went to Glasgow University. Initially to study maths and economics, which were my main subjects at school that I enjoyed and seemed to do quite well in. But then in sixth year at school, school took welcomed the arrival of their very, very first computers. And I got the chance to do a little module and introduction to computers and thought that would be a great third subject to do alongside maths and economics. And By the second year at university, I'd completely switched from maths and economics and then graduated with a degree in computing science. So it was a full kind of pivot, although we didn't use those kind of words back then, but it was a it was a pivot or a shift. Hmm. And as happened in the early 90s, the milk round was a common way of graduates getting job. The employers went round all the universities hoovering up talent. And I was really lucky to be offered a job with IBM. Yeah. And at that time, IBM had a significant facility in Greenock, about 40 minutes outside of Glasgow, and around 3,000 people working there. And naively, I thought, there we go, I'll be working in Greenock and checking out the timetable for the trains. And the job offer was to join IBM in Portsmouth at their head office. And
just a little distance away then.
Absolutely. I had to get the Atlas out at the time because we didn't have Google Maps, and started at Glasgow in the central belt of Scotland and worked my way down, and finally landed on Portsmouth at the completely other end of the country. Mm. But off I went. Joined their graduate recruitment program, and then was really fortunate, you know, over the subsequent 22 years or so with IBM to have fantastic opportunities. I changed jobs and roles almost every 3 or 4 years. Mm. I got a chance to come back to Scotland and then back to London. I worked in London for 7 or 8 years, then back to Scotland, and worked with some amazing leaders and people and teammates over those years. With some great clients of IBM on some really challenging and interesting problems and solutions. And then I was headhunted to come and join the Data Lab, which at that point was literally no more than a business plan and an idea as part of a broader innovation centre program here in Scotland. Mm-hmm. And the invitation from the exec search company came through on Christmas Eve. I remember it vividly. And it's IBM's year end is the calendar year end. And we were in the middle of closing out the year. And needless to say, I hadn't really looked at it and filed it away for review in January. And it got to January and I looked at the recruitment pack and thought, I don't really think they're looking for someone like me. I'm a corporate, you know, done this so long. I've never built anything from scratch. I'm not an entrepreneur. I clearly have a great technical kind of technology industry background.
Yeah.
I knew the industries in Scotland, the commercial industries, public sector, because my teams in IBM had engaged in and been selling and supporting them over the years. And then something happened, and I didn't send the kind of thanks but no thanks email. And one Friday, I happened to think, you know, I'm going to call the exec search lady and just find out a little bit more. And when I spoke to her on that Friday afternoon, she, after some dialogue and what have you done and what drives you, where are your passions, what motivates you, she refused to get off the phone, Paul.
As they can do.
I literally said, you need to apply for this job and I'm not getting off the phone until you agree that you're going to do so.
Wow.
And of course, as it always happens, the job was closing on the Monday morning. Mm. So frantically over the weekend, so that I had a weekend, I wrote my first CV in 20 odd years. I got some real trusted friends in my network to help review that with me over the weekend, and off it went. But what was more important was the months after that. The more I got to understand about the Data Lab's mission, its view to helping, should we say, drive a pathway for Scotland to use data better, to help our organisations use data better, to incorporate new innovative techniques into our businesses, into our public and our third sector, the more I was hooked. And that anchored itself in the fact that my daughter was just about to turn 5. She was 4 at the time.
Right.
I saw through my IBM lens that data was impacting the world and will, you know, only grow in significance and importance, data science, AI.
Yeah.
And I could see the amazing possibilities and opportunities from that, but also some of the potential pitfalls and some of the downsides if we don't get that journey right. And so I was hooked for my daughter, for her classmates and friends, that they could have a future of opportunity that I had had. And I felt, you know, the more I could influence that through the work of the data lab, then actually that became super important for me. And by the time I got the role, I really, really wanted it. And then I resigned from IBM, much again to my mother's amusement and slight disgust. And I got another talking to, shall we say, Paul, the kind of mid-40s woman just getting a row from her mum. Who is this data lab? I said, they don't really exist yet. Well, see, how am I going to tell my friends what you do? And I was saying to her, but mum, you didn't know what I did at IBM for 20 years. I don't think it's much different.
Yeah.
But anyway, here we are 6 years later. It's been the most fabulous journey, extremely rewarding, huge amounts of opportunity we've created, we've enabled, we've supported, and I've loved every minute of it.
That is brilliant testimony to the choice. I guess you get to be right the second time. It was wise to take the data lab decision.
Absolutely. But do you know what, Paul, she was actually right, because I was very fortunate in my career at IBM to take a sabbatical for 15 months. Mm-hmm. And do you know what I did? I went off kayaking and skiing around the world. I was really lucky, and she was right, because I didn't want to teach it. I just wanted to do it for me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she was right, certainly the first time, and I maybe got it right the second time, but there we go.
The joy of being a mum. The other thing that struck me, actually, hearing your story, that there are more parallels, actually, for us than I'd realised at first, with my career of like 25 years in different parts of Lloyds Banking Group, regularly kind of changing and reinventing myself and the role that I did. And then going on, it's been like 7 years now for Laughlin Consultancy and Customer Insight Leader, etc. So it's similar kind of time frames. And I was struck that, like a number of guests I've had on this podcast, unlike people's assumption that the real successful leaders have changed company every few years and worked all sorts of different places, you had this long track record at IBM. I wonder for you, Gillian, what kept you there? Why were you at IBM so long?
That's a great question. And I think the anchor of it lies in, actually, I did different roles every few years. It kept the motivation high, it kept the freshness up. It meant that as I was changing and doing different roles, a growing responsibility, I guess, an opportunity, I was always learning. So I think it was a combination of the variety and the fact that a large organization like that can offer you that. So you didn't maybe need to move firms or organizations, but you could, you know, pivot to different roles within the organization, and the chance to continually to learn. So as you grow in your career and move between those different roles, you have to learn new skills, you need to build new experiences. And for me, probably those two things were what kept me. And the great opportunities that I had, like the sabbatical, like working with different clients in different domains and sectors, I certainly feel very privileged for what IBM made possible for me. The training they gave me, that you don't often realize until you leave how powerful that was.
Yeah.
And how they've equipped you to take those skills and experience on to further things.
Yeah, thank you, Gillian. You know, echo a lot of that. And I think it's worth those out there who are developing their leadership careers knowing that that's an option too. I've heard a number of leaders who've succeeded in a similar way to the way you describe. I was also struck that obviously your degree pivoted, as you said, before the word pivot was used, to computer science. Growing a career at IBM would be seen as an absolute bastion of the technology industry, as you call it. I wonder, given you'd now be viewed by many as a leading light in the data community, do you see then that an IT background is essential to being a modern day data leader?
Simply no, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Indeed, actually, and in my view, successful data teams are those with a group of people who have diverse experiences.
Okay.
IT technology data clearly is one element of that, mm-hmm. but so are many others, whether that's business, management experience, humanities, social science, and ever more so in the growing world of AI and algorithms and the use of AI technologies for organizations, the diversity of your team is really, really key. Because if everyone is from the same background, looks and sounds the same, and I mean that in its kind of broadest sense, then actually there's some who say if your team's not diverse, then your algorithm won't be. I truly believe that actually data leaders can come in all shapes and sizes and from multiple walks of life. There are some commonalities, communication skills, critical thinking skills, great questioning skills. You know, they're probably for me more important than whether you have a data background or not.
Right. Now that makes sense, Gillian, and I'd agree. Do you feel that's a message that you're getting across as the data lab? Because I guess from the outside, and maybe it's just that it's happened at the same time, it could feel like the success of the data lab is at the same time as the success of there being lots of specific data science degree programs and data science MSCs. Do you also get a message out there of the relevance of data to people who pursue other subjects, and that that's not been a choice that doesn't mean data is any longer relevant for them?
I think for me, it is. We do a lot of work to try and ensure a broad spectrum of participants in the master's courses we support. And many of them are the application of data science, whether that's for business, whether that's for financial services, whether indeed we supported a master's recently for the application of data science and sports analytics.
Okay.
And we certainly look for a broad participation from other subject areas, whether that's other sciences. And indeed, in fact, the very first data scientist we hired at the data lab was a biologist by background.
Right.
So clearly a lot of analytical thinking, experimentation, the kind of science background. But also we've had others with law backgrounds, with we see now great success in the, should we say, the combination of domain expertise and technical and data expertise in things like medicine. And some of the most amazing work we are seeing here are medics who have gained an understanding of technology and data and AI and looking at ways these types of technologies can solve domain problems that are specific for medicine or indeed other sectors. Also, I think it's really important the work that's done in schools and in our college sector to embed data skills. And indeed, Scotland was, I believe, the first in the UK to launch a national performance award for data science for our school children. Right. And that content and award has now also been incorporated into multiple college courses, whether that's mechanics, healthcare, beauticians. Many of those individuals will go on to be entrepreneurs and run their own business, maybe in that domain. But certainly, data will be an element and technology and digital will be skills that they will need to have in their businesses. So I do believe that it's really important that we have a foundational level, almost like a data citizen kind of idea, with clearly the deep technical specialists where we need them, but that's an important part of creating a society that knows how to understand, question, and explore what data means to them.
Yeah, that makes sense, Gillian. Yeah, it's funny listening to you, and I hear what you say also about that data citizen foundation for people studying almost anything. But the breadth of application for your data science masters, it reminded me in some ways of conversion courses for teachers. It's that same kind of people coming from a broad spectrum of subjects, but having the conversion to be able to apply data science in order to do their specialism better. Would that be the right take on it?
I think that, yeah, absolutely. It's a good parallel to make, Paul. I also think that the opportunity for people to explore a career in data from other subjects is vitally important. So the more we can do to open up awareness, open their eyes to that possibility and enable it when they want to make that step, then the better.
Yeah, that makes good sense. I'm aware from knowing a bit about your IBM background, Gillian, that you also performed a number of business leadership roles, very commercial roles. I probably see them as sales focused roles. And I wonder whether, looking back, you see that as a break from the technology and data leader track you were on, or is another part of the skill set that data leaders need? Do they need to have that sales background as well?
I don't think you need to have it. I certainly think for my journey, it was beneficial. I started in a very technical role in IBM, then worked in a kind of technical engagement role with clients. Right. So that classic sales role, and very naively, if I admit my own misgivings here, thought they make a lot of money and they don't know much. Needless to say, when I decided to make that jump, that was well and truly knocked out of me, and I realised they had different skills and huge amounts of expertise that I hadn't quite seen, shall we say. Yeah. And that gave me another opportunity to learn. I think for me, the great benefit of doing those sales and commercial roles was, and remember, it's in a technical field, so I wasn't out selling other products. I was selling technology and technology services and solutions. Fundamentally, it was looking at understanding the problem. So from the client perspective, what were they trying to achieve? Mm-hmm. And did we as IBM, as the vendor or supplier or partner, have the right skills, capabilities, products, support offerings that could help them achieve their goals? Mm-hmm. So for me, the benefit of that track was that real understanding from a business perspective and translating them into a technical need, and then going on the journey with the clients to do that. So I don't think it's essential. And there are different ways to gain those types of skills, that's for sure. So there'll be different pathways, I believe, to, you know, what you term a data leader.
Yeah,
that one for me was, I thought, very useful, but it was more around the skills that it helped me build than the role itself.
Yeah, that makes sense. Although I love your honesty, which has been true for many technical people I know, of suddenly discovering that it's not all spin in sales and there are some real skills there. That's very true. And I've come to respect a lot of genuinely talented sales leaders over the years in a way I didn't when I was younger.
Absolutely.
But no, it's a good point, Gillian, that even if it doesn't come from that background, I've also seen in people who are really, really skilled at it better than me, the power of really effective storytelling, the power of really effective listening in order to influence and understand that domain better. And maybe it's not a side, I guess the storytelling gets covered a lot in social media and all the sort of hype about data leaders. But I guess I don't hear so much about, as you emphasize, that kind of listening, that really being close and understanding the business problems so that you can talk their language in a natural way, like really effective salespeople do.
Absolutely. I think whether it's a data leader or indeed any leader, you know, you look at the characteristics, great questioning and great listening often is at the top of the pile of skills that would very be true. Beneficial to you. And I do think that background in sales, you have to ask a lot of questions if you want to be successful. You have to listen very, very well. And for me, I think that's just part of being a great leader. And you do need it, whether you're a data leader or indeed a leader in another area or domain.
Good advice. I can think of a lot of people from a coaching background who'd be standing up and applauding. Moving on then to think about the role that you took at the Data Lab Scotland, I was moved, I guess, by your story of really connecting with your daughter and her future and what your role could mean in terms of making that a better prospect for her, giving her opportunities you'd want her to have. It struck me how much that must have helped motivate you, that kind of connection with a very, very human purpose. Is that something that you'd recommend that data leaders connect with? You know, we get people like Simon Sinek talking about connecting with your why and finding your why and all this. I guess sometimes I hear that and it seems a bit blasé or a bit like a process. Yours felt very organic and real and authentic, and it was about a real person. Do you find that that makes a difference to how you've led at the Data Lab, that you can almost look at your daughter and see, I remember why I'm doing this?
Yeah, I do. I think it's probably even more fundamental than that, is is if you can connect with your, I guess, the purpose of the organization you're working in or you lead or you work for, and the work that you do, the motivation's there every day to make a difference. So it's almost more of a fundamental, do I enjoy what I do? And the chances of enjoying what you do are increased if you really believe in the purpose of the organization and what it's doing. And there's a lot of talk now around the world about, you know, organizational brand and values and culture and the purpose-led leadership. I do think we are very fortunate, and I'm super fortunate to work in an organization where I truly believe and I'm motivated by what we're doing and why we're doing it. And to get up every day, and we work for a long part of our lives, for a long part of our days, it takes us away from our family and those who we love, and put stresses and strains on us. I really believe that you've got to love what you do. And if part of that you love the purpose of why you're doing it, then I think it just makes for a happier life, a happier work life, and a happier life outside of work.
Wholeheartedly agree, Julian. I wonder whether, I mean, you meet a lot of data leaders in the work that you do. You must be one of the most connected people with the data community, certainly in Scotland. I guess I'm conscious that there's often a stereotype of data or analytics leaders that they're a bit geeky, a bit backroom and technical. Maybe they don't get out much. That's why they're doing that kind of work. And yet, I guess that the most impactful, I think, have connected with that purpose. They are really engaged with the purpose of the organization. They are really motivated with the change that they're bringing about in the organization and for people, not just technology for technology's sake. Do you see more of that? Do you think there's been progress in data and technical leaders becoming more purpose-led as well?
Absolutely. I think to be a true data leader in an organization, ultimately the work you're doing is making a difference to the organization's operational ability to deliver on their strategy, to deliver that strategy faster, better, more impactful. Therefore, I think to be a data leader, you've got to connect with that purpose. You've got to understand the work that you and your teams do, why you're doing it in order to impact the business. You're not running pilots. It's not about playing in the back room. It's not about, it's all for helping the business achieve its objectives and goals, or the organization, because it equally applies to public or third sector organizations. And so to be an effective leader, you've got to understand the organizational objectives and how the work you do contributes to that. And I do think that's the same actually for many parts of an organization, whether that's the finance function or HR. The more you can connect with that and see how your role, irrespective of whether you're an administrator, a security person, a HR partner, how your work contributes to the organization, I think can lead to better work and a much more fulfilling work. So I do think it's beneficial to connect with that purpose.
Great. Good. Yes, no, agreed. Focusing more broadly on what the Data Lab Scotland has achieved, in addition to your OBE, which is obviously a significant achievement, there have been many plaudits for how Data Lab Scotland has prepared the next generation, built that collaboration between academia and business, as I might put it. I wonder why you think it succeeded and whether you think there are lessons to be learned for elsewhere in the UK, because I'm not aware of whether I live in Wales or in England or in Northern Ireland, having anything that's quite the same success that you've seen in Scotland?
It's a great question, actually. And I think reflecting back over the years and the things we've done, and believe me, we've not always got it right. And we've tried some things that haven't worked. And we note that up to, well, we've learned from that. And what can that we use from that to inform our future? But there's a few key ingredients, I think. One was the initial funding and the empowerment and autonomy that was awarded to us by our funders. Right. So way back in 2014, the funding for the data lab at that point came from the Scottish Funding Council. They are the organisation which funds our colleges and universities, and they took the bold and I think brave decision to create the Innovation Centre programme. At that time, there were 8 innovation centres, of which we were one. Mm-hmm. And they invested in around 125 million in the overall programme.
Right.
And then they enabled the teams to be created to build those innovation centres. And I was fortunate enough, as I said, to get the CEO role at Data Lab and to build it way back in 2015. And the key, one of the first things is they wanted industrial leaders to come in and run the innovation centre. So mm-hmm. you immediately come in with a set of skills and experience that are relevant, a set of a network, shall we say, that you can build sure. on. We all know how important networks are.
Absolutely.
I guess a drive and a motivation from a commercial background is very useful, particularly mm-hmm. when you want to start something new with a pace and an agility and a drive, shall we say, that maybe mm-hmm. you see more often in some sectors than others.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that first part was critically important. The funding, the ambition, the empowerment and the autonomy, and then putting the right team in place. So that gave you the, shall we say, the foundations for potential success. Growing on that foundation then is always be listening. So mm-hmm. we mm-hmm. constantly listen to our partners, our market, our boards, our network, our ambassadors, our collaborators at the universities, at the mm. colleges. Mm. What is it you need? Where is there gaps that there are either in the market through market failure or just a lack of market, sure. through lack of skills? Where are the gaps that are stopping you progress on your data journey?
Mm.
And that, by listening to those inputs, it helps us shape services that are relevant, that are impactful, and that can actually make a difference. And the key for us is always to listen to that. So we created we've called it the kind of decision diamond about what do we do and what do we not do? Because mm-hmm. clearly data is having an impact in every single sector, every domain,
sure. Sure.
every size of organization, from yeah. a startup to SME to multinationals, globals. And We are fortunate we get asked to be involved in many things, and we don't have the resource or the capacity to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was critical for us to create a framework of decision making mm-hmm. about where we do get involved and where we don't. And for us, that was the creation of a decision diamond with 5 questions. So first okay. of all, does it align with our mission, our purpose?
Mm-hmm.
Second, is there a need in the market? Are people telling us this is what is inhibiting us moving forward? Is there a gap? So is there a commercial partner or mm-hmm. a supplier or a university or it doesn't matter. Is there someone else delivering that yeah. actually your job is to make the connection, not yeah. to build a new service?
Yeah.
The fourth question, are we the right people to do it? So the answer to those first 3 could be yes, but actually we are not the right people to step in.
Yeah.
It could be, you know what, it should be a university, it should be the Scottish Government, it should be a commercial supplier.
Mm.
So are we the right people to do it? And the final question is, how does it get paid for? Is it a grant yeah. from public sector? Is it commercial income? Is it philanthropy?
Mm.
And we only proceed if the answer to all of those questions is positive.
Nice.
But it's also a great reflection on what do you stop doing? Because there are certainly things we have done in the past that we no longer do because there is no longer a gap. There is now a supply chain in place. Right. There are better, you know, equipped consultants and suppliers and software that although there's still a need and there's, you know, aligns with our mission, there's no longer a gap. So there's someone stepped into that. And for me, that's also a great positive. As an innovation center, our goal should be at the kind of front end of that innovation and then stepping out when the environment and don't need us anymore. So I think that's been a key driver of the success. So probably a long way around saying kind of foundations were right. Yeah. There was money there. There was a clear ambition, there was autonomy and empowerment, they hired the right people, and then the journey along the way is all about listening and being quite prescriptive in what you do, what you don't, and then the opportunities there to make a difference.
Brilliant. Thank you, Gillian. And by the sound of it, those five questions, which I really like, by the way, really nice and clear, you apply them also to the work you're already doing. There is some kind of periodic review process of we ought to prioritize what's already on the stack as well and not just let there be a higher hurdle for doing something new and never challenge what we're doing already.
Absolutely. And indeed, we used to do quite a bit around schools, but what happened, we weren't really tasked with that, shall we say. Yeah. We felt it was a gap. There have been other programs now funded to do significant work in schools with data. As part of the Edinburgh City Region deal, the data-driven innovation program, the skills element has a very significant schools program. And so therefore the gap was no longer there and we stepped out, which is, I think that's a really positive thing.
Yes. And a good model for collaboration and working most effectively for the impact being greater than the sum of the parts. That makes good sense. I've noticed on social media and other channels the kind of global interest in what you're doing and sometimes getting out and about back in the day when we used to. Mm-hmm. Where's that coming from? Is it global interest in what you've described to us already? Is it the AI strategy being developed for Scotland? What's the global interest in your work, Gillian?
So I think initially it came from, I guess, an outreach activity that we did in conjunction with Scottish Development International, which is our the organisation that looks after enabling our organisations to have trade opportunities internationally, and also looking at the opportunity for foreign direct investment into Scotland. So organisations coming and building teams in Scotland, and alongside the DIT, Department of International Trade, we engaged in multiple international missions, whether that's taking Scottish organisations out to a geography, anchor it around a kind of data conference, but build trade and investment opportunities during those weeks and engagement. And without fail, whether it was East Coast US, West Coast US, Singapore, China, parts of Europe, Germany, when we talked about the Data Lab story, invariably there would be a question, when are you setting up here? Because that, shall we say, non-commercial, non-threatening, enabling role that we play, building together that trinity of government, public sector, academia and industry, so those three things together, is not often easy to do. It's challenging, but when you get it right, it can be supremely impactful. So I think that was part of the interest. I think that has also enabled a lot of foreign direct investment into Scotland, so people and organizations coming and building their teams here in Scotland, because they felt, well, if we come to Scotland and we know the Data Lab, we know everyone. We're one step away from a minister, we're a step away from potential clients, partners, from suppliers, from collaborators. And I think that's another important part. Scotland, I like to call it the kind of Goldilocks economy. It's not too big or too small, too hot or too cold. Right. You can get your arms around it. Yeah. And so you can be really connected. And so organizations see that as a significant advantage of, well, if I come and build my data team in Scotland, I know they're going to be supported. They're going to be connected into a community that is growing and robust and supportive. And that's a really positive thing to do. And then more laterally, with the announcement of the AI strategy for Scotland and its launch in March earlier this year, we've certainly had a lot of interest from around the world. And indeed, at its launch event, we had a panelist from speakers from New York, from Finland and from New Zealand, looking at the strategy and its ambitions around ethical, trustworthy and inclusive AI is the way we want to do it here in Scotland, as a really powerful ambition and a powerful strategy. So I do think those earlier journeys, that those earlier connections, and we have now Data Lab ambassadors around the world, and then more recently the work of the strategy, has engaged, a global audience and enabled us to drive connections that maybe otherwise would have been more challenging.
Nice. Oh, good to hear, Gillian. And lots of echoes of your earlier themes of listening and networking as well, and the power of those. I need to begin to plan toward closing down our conversation, although I'm tempted to talk to you for hours. It's fascinating stuff. Thank you. The couple of questions I'd like to close with are ones that regular listeners will know are perennial ones, but I find they always add useful insights. So I try and protect some time on every episode to ask the leader for advice they give to those who are earlier in their data science careers. Portion of our listenership at that stage, what skills or knowledge, knowing what you know now, would you advise them to focus on developing?
Okay, I think there's definitely a couple of things. I think the ability to learn all of the other skills that are important. I like to call them meta skills rather than soft skills. So the listening, the questioning, the critical thinking, teamwork, none of great data projects happen in a vacuum. They're teams. So those things, I think, are they're always worth working on them. I still work on those skills for me because I think you can always get better. So beyond obviously the technical skills that you need to learn. In terms of technical skills, I would always be looking for opportunities to augment what I know. There has never been a better time for online learning, for content that you can access free, for competitions you can get involved in, like Kaggle, for extracurricular, almost, if you want to call it, activities, should that motivate you and drive you, even if it's, if you apply it to your hobby. I remember one of the great DataFest fringe events was about the application of data science and modeling and predicting which Monroes should be climbed based on weather patterns and travel optimization. And you think, what a great evening project or interesting thing for someone to do. The other thing is, we've mentioned it all the way through, is the networking. Get involved in the meetup community. We jointly run the data science meetup community here in Scotland with MBN.
Yes.
There are 4,500 now in that network.
Wow, that's grown.
Absolutely. And we are launching, we've been running it in a pilot phase for the last couple of months. We're launching a brand new data community that I would encourage people to come and join. There'll be practitioner connectivity there, mentoring opportunities, etc. So I think meta skills, technical skills, be looking for what are new skills you could add to your technical capability and experience. Look for other opportunities to learn from other groups, and so networking and maybe joining other activities, either in an area or your hobby or your domain that you like. I think those three things, I think, can line you up for a wonderful career.
Brilliant. Great tip. And listeners, you can see how successful Gillian's been, so I'd listen if I was you. The closing question I've asked every leader, because I just like it so much, is to tell me something they've changed their mind on in the last few years. And the reason, although you've amply demonstrated this during our conversation, Gillian, is just to emphasize no leaders are the finished article. We're all still learning and growing and changing. And that's what keeps you vibrant as a leader, that you're still willing to change. So what about you, Gillian? What have you changed your mind on in the last few years?
Oh, that's a great question. If I can indulge myself, one thing, and this is back to the story of where we started with my daughter,
like stand-up comedy.
I honestly thought the toddler years were going to be the most difficult. Well, she's just nighing on the teenage years. And I've certainly changed my mind on that, Paul. So we'll park that. And I think I'm in for a bit of a torrid time. But in terms of work, I'm always open to changing my mind. I think it's back to that great questioning, great listening. So the development of those questions that I shared, the decision diamond questions, have enabled me to change my mind on a few things. I was quite wedded to this is a great thing, we should keep doing it. Mm-hmm. And actually I've changed my mind, and you know what, we need to step back from that. We mm-hmm. can focus our resources and our impact, our assets in a different way to drive more impact. So I think that's a really important context to be always willing to change your mind. And then maybe for me personally, I've certainly invested much more time in me over the last 18 months with COVID. And it's that classic of put your oxygen mask on first, your life jacket on first.
Yeah.
And I historically was very, very bad at that. My priorities would go much further down the list. I still haven't got this right. So it's a work in progress, I shall say. And if we ever get a chance to do this again, you can hold me accountable and grill me on it, Paul.
Okay.
But I think the importance of that self-care, I think is, for me, I've changed my mind on that.
Brilliant. Really nice set of answers, Gillian. Thank you for that. And thank you for everything you shared with us today. It's been a pleasure to chat with you, Gillian.
And a pleasure to chat to you, Paul. Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for listening as well. I hope you found that helpful and continue to listen to the Customer Insight Leader podcast. More great interviews coming up each week. And there's also fresh content. Sorry, more great interviews coming up. And each week, there's fresh content on our blog, Customer Insight Leader, all one word, .com. On the podcast, I aim to get a new episode out about once a fortnight. We have the regularity here. But do check out the blog as well, because there's content more often. Before then, it just remains for me to say thank you, everybody, for your time. Have a great week, and perhaps reflect on that decision diamond, those five questions. What could it prompt you to decide to prioritize or do differently? Bye for now.